I'm Mavelyn and I'm an addict.
Hi, Marilyn.
And I am so nervous. I really want to scream out so much just to get the tension out. This is the bit of service that I really struggle with, actually. It's just that feeling of being really exposed, you know, and thinking, am I going to be good enough? But it's like, at the end of the day, I know there's a lot of goodwill in here. Basically, I came and loads of people have said to me, oh, you're going to be all right. And it's like, yeah, you know. And it's like, no one wants me to do bad. I mean, no one goes to a meeting and goes, oh, I want to hear a bad chair. Most people want to hear something positive. So I'll just do my best. Background. And I always start with, like, my childhood, because what I've realised since being in recovery is I'm not just dealing with the wreckage of my drug use. I'm dealing with the wreckage of the whole of my past. You know, when the person that I am since I put down drugs, I had all that childhood shit to deal with still, you know, it didn't just disappear. So I was born in Leeds, in Chapel Town. Most people know it as ghetto, and it is. It's quite a dysfunctional area. And my mother killed herself when I was about 18 months, and I was raised by a dad who was an alcoholic, and he ran a blues, and he ran working girls, he brought drugs into the country. And so basically, as a child, I was exposed to lots of chaos, lots of madness. There was lots of abuse in our house, physical abuse, sexual abuse. And what I believe now is, like, it was just a symptom of his illness, you know. And what I've learnt with this disease is, there goes I, but for the grace of God, because I've done a lot of bad things, you know. And I think once you start trading on human flesh, he was so ill, it made no difference what human flesh he was dealing with, you know. So I lived in that chaotic surroundings till I was about 8. And then I went into a children's home, like Catholic welfare society, and it was like one extreme to the other, you know, from being at a home where it was like total chaos and carnage, and what I say today, I'm gonna wonder why you're not doing it tomorrow. I went into this like surroundings where everything was really regimented. If you weren't up for your breakfast, you missed breakfast, you know, and lunch times were like that, bedtimes were like that. What can I say about it? It was a really massive home, basically. There was like about 36 children, like separated into 6 flats. And I don't really believe you can take so many dysfunctional children, put them together, and think that you're going to get function. You know, it's madness. They don't do it that bad nowadays. It's smaller homes. But basically, what it left me with was like, I didn't have this sense of self. I always felt very disconnected from myself as a child. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. There's so many situations I can think of where it was like I was viewing me as a different person. And I never really felt like I belonged anywhere. That's one of my main feelings, and just never feeling good enough. And I developed a lisp, I had a stutter, and I had eczema. Lovely. So, like, I left Leeds about 17, and I moved to London. Oh, yeah, I should include, obviously. In my young days, I used to, like, leave the children's home and still go back to Chapel Town. I needed to go somewhere where I sort of felt I belonged, because it's like where the children's home was, it was very white. At that point, there was a lot of NF stuff going on, you know. So I definitely never really felt safe there. So I was the kid who would go missing from the children's home, have to be brought back by the police. And like when we met up with the other kids on the street in Chapel Town, we smoked weed, we drank. It was just what we did. In the children's home, we're forever sneaking, drinking. You know, and it was just what we did, and it made us feel better. It made us forget really what was going on around us. So I moved to London. It's all going to be really different. No one knows me. I can totally reinvent myself. I was really lucky. I must have had some sort of a brain. I got a job working as a residential children's home. Again, returning to what you know. And then it was like my double life really took off. Throughout the days, or like when I worked shifts, I'd be trying to take care of other people, doing care plans, things like that. Outside of that, I was drinking loads. At 18, I was at the doctor's because I had a really bad drink problem. And what happened was then I discovered Class A's, and then it just meant my drinking wasn't a problem. I could drink more, I could last longer, party could go on, and it was like, well, hey, bring it on. Because my list disappeared. It was really mad. At this point, my list disappeared, my eczema cleared up. And when I drank, when I took drugs, I felt really comfortable in my own skin, and it was like suddenly, I felt important. I felt like I was valid. And my house became like a hotbed of activity. You know, people would be always ringing me up to see what's going on. All the girls would come round to my house, you know, to get ready for the nights out. Things like that. So as well as working, and then I got into selling. And I thought life was fucking great, to be honest. And I do have to say this. The party continued and it was real nice. Now at this point, one of the girls that I used to look after in the children's home, she'd been to rehab and other things had happened to her. And I met up with her on the club scene, and this is how mad I was and how I thought I knew about life and the world. She was a drug addict because she'd been to rehab, you know. But I was just someone who used drugs. So, and in my like messed up wisdom, it was like, you can come to my house and like we can drink, but you couldn't see me doing drugs, so that'd be tempting her. Do you know what I mean? And I'd be at work and my friends would be using with her. And it's really mad because as life is, she came back into my life years later and we're both in recovery now, you know. Funny things how like it turns out. But I thought I was doing the best, but I didn't know what addiction was. I had no idea that this solution recommended like abstinence from all drugs. So the party continues, it's all good, and then I'm using drugs when I don't really want to. It's escalated and I'm mixing with people that I don't really want to mix with. All these, I started then, I guess, the control bit came into it, where you play games with yourself. You know, I won't pipe today, I'll just smoke it in a spliff. I'm not going to use today, and then someone comes round. And I was still at that point where I thought, if they wouldn't have come round, I wouldn't have used today. I was still sort of managing to go to work. I was a person who'd go to work and then I'd be off sick for how long. And I just thought I was one of those sickly people. And then the party was fucking over, basically, because now I'm at a point where I'm using drugs when I don't want to. I'm having to go out there and I'm selling myself. I'm doing loads of degrading things. I'm using other people to get what I want. Just like loads of the manipulation, all that shit came on, and I couldn't go to work no more. Around this time with my using, I was visited by touches of paranoia. It's like maybe whatever time in the early hours of the morning, I'd be really paranoid, and the next day it would fade, and I just continued using through this. And then it came to the point where the paranoia came and it just didn't go. And at this point now, like, I'm the mad girl in the area. I'm the lunatic girl. So from my phone being the phone that constantly rang off, now it's empty. You know, it's like my phone's there just purely for decoration. No one wants to come to visit me. I can't sell at this point because I'm just totally convinced that the police are going to nab me and it's all a set up and I just have no trust of people. I can't have my windows open because everyone is talking about me. The radio, the TV, there's all these fucking messages and everyone's out to get me. Really thought I was so important, do you know what I mean? But the other thing was, I kept thinking, like, it's not real. This can't be happening to me. And I kept thinking, there must be some experiment going on, and people are going to see that I'm not coping. Then someone's going to come in, and they're going to go, ah! And it didn't happen. So I'm not working. I'm just stuck in my flat, completely by myself. The days are just ticking over. God, I don't even know. There was, so from that bit, I just remember, I've decided I'm going to kill myself. You know, I remember ringing up my sister for summer, and she's told me that I'm bad blood and I best send all her things back. Okay. I remember wanting just to dial any number in a phone and say to someone, just speak to me, say something nice to me, because I hadn't heard anyone say anything nice to me. I felt totally exposed when I walked down the street. I felt like everyone could see through me, and everyone knew all the bad things I'd done. You could all see how twisted and evil my mind was. So I just take a mixture of pills, alcohol. I remember coming to in, like, just... I came to and I was just covered in sick, basically. That didn't work, so I'm really fucking shit now. Slipped my wrist. I'm at UCH hospital. They bandaged me up. I had been seeing psychiatrists by this point, but I hadn't told them that I'd been using drugs. At this point, I tell the psychiatrist that I've been using crack, and they tell me, like, you just cannot use it no more. Well, that's all right then, I can't use it no more. All right, sorted. I remember being back at home and can't use it no more. And a time went where I didn't use Class A's. I was just drinking and smoking draw. But then the next time I use crack, I don't even... I actually think I get some grace, because I don't get paranoid that day. It comes on me top heavy 3 days later. Everyone is trying to kill me. Very soon after that, I remember finding the rooms. I found one fellowship, and then I found another fellowship. And what I remember about my first meeting was walking in, and this woman, the tea lady, smiling at me and being really kind to me. She brought me in the kitchen with her, and she spoke to me, because I was petrified. Because from finding the number to getting to my meeting, it still became one of those, tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow. I was petrified. She was just really nice to me. But I was so shut down, and I was so full of fear. You know when people said, oh, the newcomer's the most important person? Ding! Like, fed into my paranoia. You lot all know. Do you know what I mean? I had to, so in the end, I used to sit at the back of the room with my headscarf on and keep my head down. I couldn't do coffee like other people, because I didn't know how to talk to people. So I would come to the meetings, I would get the little bits of literature, and then straight from the meeting, I'd run home, but I'd run home happy, and then I'd read all this literature. And then they had like this leaflet, Living the Programme, and it's got all these questions like, have your disease been active today? And, you know, did you speak to someone from the fellowship today? And all these stuff. And every night I used to sit down and like answer these questions. And it was my way of like sort of cleansing my brain. It was like the madness started to fade, and I started to get some sort of perspective about stuff. And what I do remember was just like that feeling of hope, because prior to the rooms, I just remember that big empty feeling and that big cloud over me, and I never thought it was going to shift. Started doing, problems with a sponsor. Weren't one of the people who came into the fellowship and got a sponsor straight away. I had a real problem of trusting people, you know, but a guy said to me, it's really nice actually, I'm here, and I was like really, not paranoid, but really frightened because this isn't my regular meeting, but I've come in and there's so many people in this room who have been part of my recovery, you know, and it's nice just to reflect on it. There was a guy who was here and he said to me, you know, I'm willing to work with you, you know, I'll like explain to you about the program. And he said, but the thing is, you have to be looking for another sponsor. You know, if there's any issues of us fancying each other, that's our disease working. Got to be really clear what we're trying to do here. And I used to go over to that step meeting and it was really nice. I started doing the steps, powerless. I understood what powerless was, and powerless was when I was using drugs when I didn't want to. It was when I couldn't stop. It was the stuff that made me go out there and try to get more, you know. My life was totally unmanageable, couldn't function. But what I also found with doing the step one was it's about these reservations that we have, you know. And I really believe that I didn't have any reservations about could I use again. Now, when they talk about conceding to your most innermost self, that's the point for me where people speak a lot about rock bottoms and things like that. For me, it's that point where it's like, I cannot fucking take this no more. I cannot abuse myself no more. There's not one part of me that can take it. And I knew that if I put another drink or drug in my body, I was bringing all that on, and I didn't want it no more. I come into the rooms and I was told, you don't have to have it, you know. And it was like surrendered. There was nothing for me to hold on to, do you know what I mean? Well, hey. And what I find with this step, or with all the steps, there's the bit where you're doing the writing, and it's such like, basically, it's like, it's a fairy thing. It's a mental thing, you know. I'm answering all these questions. I'm getting an awareness about it. It sheds light on it. But what I, there's a point where it goes from being up there to being in your heart and your soul. And for me, that point came where I'd been in the rooms, whatever length of time, I'd like shacked up with some guy. Did I really? No, I got flattered. I dropped my knickers. Never heard from him again. When I used to walk into the meeting, he'd walk out. So that brought back the rejection from him. It was the reminder of how I used to abuse myself and how I used to let other people abuse me. Made me feel like absolute crap. Also gave me another issue that I had to work on. But what it did was I had all that pain, and that step one became from being a mental thing to being an internal thing. And that's the process that we, what I needed to go through from all these steps. It's like, do it as much as to my heart content, but it's when I start to live it, when I start to feel it, when it becomes sort of second nature, and I got through it clean, do you know what I mean? Even though I did want to use, and it was like, wow, you know? So that's step two, about coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could work. I saw it when I came to the rooms. I felt it when I come to the rooms. You know, it's like previously I'd been in this world where it was all skullduggery, manipulation, and just like, you know, fun in it. Come to the rooms, and it was like there was just a nice vibe, a nice energy. There was a lot of love. There was a lot of hope, you know. I saw it working, so that was my power, you know. And then it has changed, it's progressed for me into other stuff, you know, but fundamentally, that's what it is. It's just about a greater energy, you know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I believed in God, but what I know about this program, it's not a religious program. God can be anything good and caring that we choose it to be, you know, and it's so personal. And so for me, it's like there's nothing really to get caught up in or to get confused about. It's not an analytical theory that, ooh, I have to try and get some and understand it. It's whatever works for you, you know, and it's like going for the flow with that. And with this one, for me, it was just about faith. It was just about, could I allow goodness into my life? Yes, I wanted goodness in my life. Could I have faith? Could I act on faith? Yeah, I could. You know, I just like kept putting one foot in front of the other. And the step four, this searching moral inventory on ourselves. I came in feeling like, you know, when they talk about feeling like a monster, I really did feel like I was such a bad person and I had done a bad person. I felt like I was. But from doing that step three, it's like I realised that I weren't alone no more. I had the people in the rooms. I had this loving, caring power around me. I now have the strength to really look at myself. And step four is not like a weapon that we do when we beat ourselves up over it. Do you know what I mean? It's a tool to help us and to aid us. And it was like, what bits of me work, what bits of me hold me back, what bits are keeping me stuck, and what bits are actually all right, because there must be some all right bits on me. And yes, I'd harmed loads of people, you know, and I realised I was a very fear-based person. You know, I was constantly fearing what people thought about me. Would I get it right? I was never going to have a future. Loads of resentments, and some of my resentments were misplaced. I remember hating a sister because her boyfriend beat me up. And my sponsor read it out to me, what I'd wrote, and read it again, and I still weren't getting. And she had to say to me, who actually hurt you? Oh, he did. So who is your resentment with? Wow. You know, and I got a good understanding around my dad around all this as well, to actually see him as someone with the same sickness that I've got. You know, and it's not like, oh, I did my step four, I've got a brilliant relationship with him. I don't have a relationship with him. But what it meant was that I didn't have to walk around with this like lump of hatred in me no more. Recovery's given me a choice about how I want to be and who I want in my life and who I don't want in my life, you know. And some people, for me, it's best that I keep them at a distance. And with my assets, I did a few, and then it's like my sponsor said, ring round, you know, get people to help you with this one. And I did. My step five, and I think it was at this point that I started having trust in my sponsor. Because I'd done the other steps with her, and nothing had gone wrong. She hadn't broken my trust. Before that, it was just like a bit of blind faith. When I did my four and five, then I could actually say, do you know what? I trust you. I did my five, and like people speak about it being this great relief. And when I actually did it, it was. I remember leaving a house and skipping down the road, you know. The next day, pain. It was like all these things had sort of kept me together. They'd really shaped who I thought I was. And it's like, without them, who was I? And I needed to go back to and say, why did we do that again? What was I meant to get out of this? And what I find is it's all right to do that with people. It's like we've come from this world where what we know about is like grafting, do you know what I mean? Using people and using drugs and whatever combination, do you know what I mean? This, it's like a different language. Throughout it, I certainly need people to clarify stuff for me. And there's certain points with it, I think I've got it. And then it's like, nah, sorry, lost it, you know. So it's that's how it's been for me. So but she had to explain it to me again, and I just stuck with it. The defects of character, these started being established for me, like from my step four. I saw what type of person I was. The seven was really interesting for me because at this point, my sister had come to visit me and she was only staying with me because I lived near the station and I was still bad blood and she still wanted me to run round after her and I put up with it. And what it showed me was how I create a lot of the situations, you know, like these bad things. It's like I create them because I could have stopped that by saying, do you know what? If you come to my house, you can't abuse me. But my people pleasing was so great that I was still doing all these things that I didn't want to do. Then I was wondering why I was getting full of resentment, you know? And so did my seven, and it wasn't like, oh, I used to act like that. Now I've humbly asked God to like take them away from me, and now I'm free from my character defects. Nah. Basically, for me, it was like the seven, when I'm in my defects, it's like being in a really dark room with no way out. When I'm full of fear, when I'm full of anger, that's what it's like. It's like my disease is removing me from all you lot. It wants me isolated. When I say my step seven prayer, it's like I have an awareness. It's like a bit of light is entering the room. And it's a reminder for me to like connect with my step three again. Do you know what I mean? That faith, God's with me. Because that's what the program's about. You know, it's about like just a better way of life and like this spiritual way of life. So it shines the light on me. And so I have a choice. Some of the times when I'm full of fear, I'm just bloody full of fear. But I carry on saying my prayers, do you know what I mean? And the prayers just let me know, like, it's going to pass. Oh, it's like I'll be saying my prayers, I'll be coming to my meetings, and people will give me the solution. I'm not a person where I can come to a meeting and then I talk about my shit after I've processed it all, and then when I'm at the other side of my problem, I will come and it's like, this is going on for me, and you lot shine the light on it for me. You give me a solution. You make me brain thinks in a way that it wouldn't generally think of. Because I do suffer from this distorted thinking, you know, and it's going to take time for it to change. I'm going to fly through this because basically it worked the steps, you know, and for me the steps are a solution. Some steps were easier to work than others. And what I know, it's all about like this internal change. You know, and it's about these degrees of change as well, because the more that I do them, the greater my understanding is, but I still get stuck. I went to a meeting last week, I'd been through a really terrible incident, and someone goes, after the meeting, he spoke to me, and he goes, oh, he goes, I'm really sorry. He goes, I thought you were a newcomer when I met you. And I was like, well, why are you sorry about that? I don't know if he thought that he'd been patronising to me, but he hadn't. What he'd done is he'd been kind and loving and open, how we say we are to the newcomer, but how we should just be with anyone, regardless of the time they've got. Do you know what I mean? And I think what you saw was, you saw that I came to that meeting and I was really vulnerable and you cared for me. You know, it was like perfect. It's like no matter what's going on in my life, I've got this place to come to. And sometimes I take it for granted, you know. It's like I won't go to a meeting for a week and then I expect it to be still there just because I want to go. Do you know what I mean? It's like it takes people to do all this. Service has just been a blessing for me. Service was the thing that started getting me out of self. Like I said, I was really shut down. My tea commitment was my favourite commitment. I was still unmanageable at that time. The committee, if I came late or I didn't turn up, they wouldn't really say anything. But if I turned up on time and I had everything that I needed, they'd really praise me, do you know what I mean? So it was like this positive affirmation work. Realised I loved the praise and the affirmation, so I started getting there on time and just getting it together. There was one point where I think, like, it's like we get service and we really throw ourselves into it and we have loads of service commitments, you know, and then as time goes down the line, it like it changes or it takes on different forms. And what I will say is there is a service position for everybody in NA, you know, and it's like no matter what your personality is like, there's something you can do. And there's times I find people judge, like they don't see you with one of these service commitments. And it's like, ooh, you know, we need secretaries. Ooh, what are people doing? And what are people doing is sometimes they're bringing the newcomer. Sometimes they're like just going to meetings early and helping to set up, you know. There's just loads of stuff we can do if you haven't got the time for like one of the ones where it's a set day at a set time. There's a whole like host of stuff. For me, one of my most rewarding ones was public information. And that's just like letting people know we're here, because there's loads of like addicts out there who don't know we're here. You know, they're still thinking like by reducing it or swapping like the drugs that it's going to make a change. I needed someone to tell me the fellowship was here. It's really worthwhile, and it's also like telling the professionals we're here and this is what we do, you know, and that we've got so many meetings where someone in your community who are here. Sponsorship, I've had how many sponsors? I've had about 3 sponsors. I've been sponsors to other people. And it really is that therapeutic value of one addict helping the other. There's times where I think that I had it going on. You know, I remember going to a meeting and saying, oh, I'm really clear. My sponsor's just there to help me do the steps and that's it. She's not my friend. She's not my counsellor. She's not. And it was like, oh. You know, I denied myself so much. You know, she is there fundamentally to help me do the steps, but it's a real fluid thing, you know, and I've not been that fixed with, like, the sponsors I work with. I've worked with someone for 3 years now, and it's funny, we're coming to the end, and we're coming to the end because I'm not giving her what she wants. There's that point where you're working with someone and then like this is coming out pear-shaped and that a little bit pear-shaped and you can get into like justifying it with people. But what I hear is you're not getting what you want from me. And then I have to like hold my hands up and say, do you know what? It's time for, she's actually said she wants to move on. And it hurts, but through the beauty of this step, it's still a positive relationship because we've played an important part in each of us' lives and the friendship, the relationship is going to end in a positive way. And before coming to these rooms, it would have been, well, fuck you then. And she probably would have said, fuck you as well, do you know what I mean? We would have cursed each other and walked off. And now we know it doesn't have to be like that. You know, the talk about spiritual awakening and what I believe is like, all these steps give us a spiritual awakening. It was a spiritual awakening I believe I had when I first came into this room, when I first was able to say, help. I don't understand. I don't know what to do. And it just brings like a different change in me because each step brings an awareness. And then like the thing is as well, I'm really jumping here because I'm really aware of the time, do you know what I mean? For me, it's like doing these steps and being in recovery doesn't make us immune from life. You know, there's certain people, it's like they might, something negative might happen to them, oh, they can't cope and they think they're doing it all wrong and it's like they're going through a hard time. It's life. You know, we have painful days and we have really good days. And what this does is it just gives us the skills to cope from it. In my early days, if I had a painful day, I'd want to cry loads, still do sometimes, but I just want to go to bed and keep myself away from everybody. But now I know just to put the motion in, just to keep on plodding on and things will get better. You know, yeah. Just like my life has greatly, vastly changed. You know, at first it was an external change because I didn't have to go out there, I didn't have to graft no more. And then through time, it's been like an internal change and a spiritual change. And some days I have it, and some days the steps is like a totally different language and I don't know how to apply it to my life. And I do need people to explain it to me. I didn't have a relationship with God before. I like to think I do now. The spiritual program, I just see it as, do I want goodness in my life, where I walk and how I talk. I'd like to think that I leave a trail of goodness behind me. Do you know what I mean? The more that I work these steps, I get an understanding about me, but it also gives me a greater understanding about everybody else as well. If I know, some days I'm oversensitive. I can understand that you lot might be oversensitive. You know, there's just loads of things. It shines the light on me and it shines the light on you. It makes me less judgmental about other people, you know. And, you know, I'm going to leave it there. That's it. Thank you.